This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Lanzalone Show. And returning today, one of my favorite guests, Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski. Karen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Karen, it's the end of another absolutely insane week with all the, you know, statements that we get from Trump, but it doesn't seem like anything is going in the right direction. So kind of want to get your thoughts on what we could be seeing over the weekend, what we're going to see as this war moves forward. The Department of War wants a Nobel Peace Prize. The Strait of Hormuz and who owns that. Also, it seems that Iran has become the net's forever war. So let's start off here with our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, discussing about the accolades that the Pentagon should be receiving.
When you fight a war the right way, the idea is on the other side you bring about peace. That is what we'd like to see the most. In fact, I once did a video about the one institution that should win the Nobel Peace Prize every single year is the United States military, because we are the guarantor of the safety and security, of not just of our country, but of a lot of people in this world. Last question. Yes, sir.
So, Karen, I know you spent some time in the Pentagon before. What do you think? Are there a bunch of generals and other civilian bureaucrats in that building deserving of the Nobel Peace Prize?
No, I can't think of anybody in that building then and now that would deserve it. You know, if you think about a Peace Prize, you think about someone who is knowledgeable and concerned about the welfare of others, somebody who has courage of their convictions, you know, if you think about what the average person expects of that recipient. And there's nobody like that. You know, even courage is lacking. You know, we've had these firings recently of a number of people, and it's pretty clear they're being fired because they are concerned about troops. That's, again, not that they're not concerned about killing other people. They are concerned about the troops and maybe the loss of status of their particular branch of the service, whether it's the Army or the Navy. And so they're getting fired because they disagree with the president or they challenge Hegseth, which would not be hard to do. And yet we hear nothing from them. You know, we hear it's silence. So I guess it's okay. You know, they're gonna take their firing. They're gonna take their anger, their opposition, and their disagreement, and go get a job with the defense industry, getting, you know, $1 million a year or something. So I have no respect for them because of this, and they certainly don't deserve the Peace Prize. You know, the business of the Pentagon is murder. It's not defense. I mean, it would be nice if it was defense of the United States, but it's oriented, as we've seen in every year in the past 40 or 50 years, it's oriented for expeditionary warfare. It's oriented to attack others overseas, to threaten others overseas, to coerce others far from our shores, and sometimes closer to our shores, like Cuba or Venezuela, but still to coerce. And what do those things tell you? Coerce, punish, kill, threaten, bully. Yeah, yeah. Nobel Peace Prize material. Sure.
Absolutely. Especially coming off of, you know, major war crimes that the U.S. government has committed, the operations in Maduro, the blowing up of the drug boats in the Caribbean. But, you know, most recently we had the instance where 178 Iranian school children were killed in the U.S. opening strikes of this war. So, you know, we obviously had the time to vet the intelligence. It's not, we can't say, oh, some bad guy ran into that building and we had to blow it up. We didn't know it was full of children, but you know, these things happen, fog of war, that can't be claimed. But there doesn't seem to be any real review or, you know, look back in the Pentagon to see, like, what went wrong there and how they could rectify it. It's almost a story that's gone away. Yet, imagine if it happened in the United States of America, in your community, your state, God forbid, you know, you're related to one of the children. I mean, this would be the thing that drives you and sets your life course after it happens. Yeah. And we just completely dismiss it.
Yeah, we do. And also, there's a reason why there's no internet for any of our troops overseas in this particular battle. They said a lot of the guys in the Navy ship that shot down the Iranian ship Dina, the training ship that was unarmed. It was in off of the coast of Sri Lanka, you know, coming back. It was known to be unarmed. We were at the same exercise, so we knew the ship was unarmed. And we sunk it with not just one, but two torpedoes and killed a bunch of, you know, young men, Navy guys, for no reason. They couldn't defend themselves. We didn't really give them a chance to avoid being shot down. They wanted to sink them because Hegg says, you know, Hegg could boast that it was the first Navy ship we'd sunk with a torpedo since World War II or something. So that's a war crime. And there are people in the sub who were not pleased with that. I'm talking about average guys, but all the people who are being forced to do these war crimes at the command of Trump and Hegseth and some others, these guys are being silenced and isolated from communication with everybody, the whole crowd. You know, there's no contact with family members. So we will hear more about these war crimes when these guys come back. And we're going to hear a lot from the guys that have been to sea for 200 and almost 300 days now on what was the ship? The Ford.
Which, so, by the way, is back in the Eastern Mediterranean.
That's right.
You know, just bringing it up.
North. It's in the North Red Sea now. They did pass through. Yeah, so they're ready to continue to work those guys. And boy, do they have stories to tell. You know, it's just insane. So we don't want to hear from our troops. We're really, this is an elite. This is Epstein's Fury or Epstein's F-up, you know, as people are calling this operation. Because it is an elite war run by elites, organized by elites. It has the strategy that's designed by the elites. And the people that are paying the moral price and the every other price is the guys at the bottom of the pyramid. It's the troops. It's their families. It is people who have an average American morality, which is we know what right and wrong is, okay? We know what the law says. We know what a lawful order is. You know, they made a big stink about some congressmen saying you don't have to obey illegal orders. That we know that. That's part of our everybody in the military knows that, okay? And yet they're punishing Kelly and some other folks because they happen to say it and remind us of that. So I think the leadership, the elite leadership, certainly in Washington, sees the military people as another enemy, really, an enemy to be used and used up, which is what they're doing. I mean, they're using up the military, which is fine by me because the weapons, I'm glad to see that we're at 50% and down to 30% of various missile types and weapons types. Because I think when Trump wants to ask for this extra money, the American people, by that time, we'll have our guys home. Our guys and gals will be back home talking about the stupidity of this stupid thing that he did in Iran. And I don't think he's going to get his $1.5 trillion. I think people are going to say, look, everything you paid for is overpriced and under operational. It's not reliable. It didn't work. You ended up losing it all. And no, we're not giving you $1.5 trillion to buy more of this same garbage. And already we're losing contracts because the global buyer of weapon systems, you know, U.S. provides, I think, used to be like 46. I think it's 43% now of the global weapons manufacturing marketing. That comes from the United States. Well, we're losing customers because they're saying, wait a minute, this didn't work very well. We got to actually see the demonstration. And guess what? We're not going to go with your product. We're going to buy a cheaper product that works better. And again, it's one of the interesting benefits of this war. You know, we're losing our credibility. We're losing our military weapons marketplace globally. We're pissing off some of our most reliable buyers in the Gulf states and in NATO. You know, the NATO countries don't like being called the things that Trump is calling them. What, you didn't do what I told you, so now we're going to kick you out of NATO? It's like, thank you. Thank you, because I don't want to buy your garbage anymore. And I'm talking about not just our garbage demands that we put on them, but actually our military capacity, our products. They are not good. Competition makes things better. What do we have in our military-industrial complex? Do we have competition? No, we have collusion. Yeah. So we produce these massive, expensive things that aren't oriented towards defense at all, so they won't defend America. And now we find out they don't even work in expeditionary warfare when we attack an enemy, like we said Iran was.
Yeah, and just a couple of things I want to add there. I do think the Pentagon is going to be asking for about $1.7 trillion next year.
1.7 now. Oh, my goodness.
It's the 1.5 for the actual defense budget war budget, and then another $200 billion for the Iran supplemental. So, we're going to be pretty close to $2 trillion when they're said and done with this, because I don't think that $200 billion is going to actually be enough to pay for the war against Iran. And on the, you know, selling arms abroad point there, Karen, another thing is, you know, a couple of years ago, they were like promising European countries, hey, if you give your Patriot missiles to Ukraine, you'll get bumped up to the top of the list to receive the next Patriot missiles that aren't going to the United States once they're produced. Well, that was already 2027, 2028. Now, imagine we have 4 years worth of our own inventories of Patriot and Thad missiles to refill. When are we going to have any to give to the Germans or the, you know, other NATO members, much less Taiwan, which is at the bottom of the list? All these countries are going to have to go other places seeking. Now, on the point of war crimes, Karen, I think there's a sense of, especially with Pete Hegseth at the top, this idea that we lost the Vietnam War because we didn't allow, you know, the military to take the gloves off. We constrained them. We forced to follow through with their national law. And when we do things like sink the Iranian unarmed vessel, this is what people do when they're serious about going to war. But from my perspective, Karen, if you have an unarmed Iranian vessel that has to transit from Sri Lanka to Iran, you intercept it with a guided missile destroyer. You take the ship. Now you have 100-something Iranian POW. So God forbid an American pilot goes down over Iran. We have a prisoner swap exchange. And if Donald Trump actually does get this war to go the way he wants, now you have a brand new, nice, shiny flagship for the new Iranian Navy that you want to have. So does the idea of taking the gloves off actually work? Is that the American military's problem, that we just haven't been cruel enough in the past?
You know, it's arrogance, of course, this is why we wouldn't think about what you just said, which is really would have been a great idea. Take that ship and hold those guys as prisoners of war, even though we haven't declared war. We could call them POWs, and we could use them as leverage. But Trump, in Trump's mind and in Hegseth's mind, they don't ever intend to need leverage. I mean, the idea would not occur to them that they would need leverage. You know, they thought this thing was going to last 4 days. You know, they thought the government would fold and immediately become U.S. lackeys. I mean, the insanity of the people that designed this war is on open display. And I don't think It would be very interesting to see what they write in their memoirs about what they thought was going to happen, because they would be ashamed to say what they... I mean, it's just so unbased in reality. But they're very arrogant. And I think what Hedseth likes to do, particularly, is we like to demonstrate power. And they miss the point that when you shoot an unarmed vessel and kill kids in a school... And a number of, you know, the other things that we've been doing to demonstrate our power, it doesn't demonstrate, it demonstrates criminality, immorality, and weakness. You and I, and I think most of America, can see that these are not proper targets, and very much the legal people and an average moral person can see that this is wrong. But this is an elite war. They don't operate like we do. They don't think like we do. Everything is a demonstration. Everything is a show. Everything is they're playing this weird chess game, except it's really not even chess. It's not even checkers. You know, the game they're playing is an idiot's game. But they have they imagine themselves to be geniuses. And so they don't need to prepare for a failure and have to trade hostages with Iran. Why would they ever prepare for that? There will be no failure. I mean, it's almost... I think they make novels and plays about militaries that operate like this, you know, and we laugh at them and we try to take a lesson from them, but we're actually living it. So I don't know, you know, I don't know. And if anybody questions it or even poses any question about either military propriety, legal propriety, you know, operational effectiveness, apparently they get fired. So... what are you going to do? I'm very much looking forward to when all of our carriers come back and our units come back and the expeditionary forces come back and tell their truth. I mean, nothing will be the whole truth, but I would like to hear their truth about what they saw and what they were asked to do. And particularly, if it is true that USA Today, and I used it in an article, a picture from USA Today of these empty trays or food trays on the ships that had very little food on them. You know, I mean, I guess we have to add the sailors to the starving one-fifth of Americans who don't get enough food every day. This is, like, insane. And if that's true, if those are real pictures that somebody took and sneaked out, then there's going to be some incredible, incredible stories. And again, failed wars, like Vietnam, you really do produce wonderful novels and poetry and music as a result of failed wars. So we might be in for a great era of art in the United States that will come from these guys who, you know, like Catch-22. They're living it right now. They are living Catch-22, our soldiers. Now, does that mean we're going to win or lose this war? I mean, it's not a war. We haven't declared a war. What do we really call it? A blockade of a blockade that didn't exist before? And, you know, this is not even strategy. This doesn't... The blockade is not even a blockade, our blockade. Now, the Iranians can control what they want to control because it's a tiny little area and they have the ability to do it and the willingness to do it. They could have done it a long time ago. They did it because they were attacked as a retaliatory thing, and now they're profiting from it to some extent. They have changed the power ratios in the region. But our so-called blockade, or I should say Trump's blockade, is... Our carriers can't come closer than 400 nautical miles to the mouth of the Strait of Hormuz. So, you know, what are we doing here? We're flying a bunch of helicopters and other small boats and running our radars, hoping we'll find somebody in this vast, vast ocean. You know, they say ships are getting through. Of course they are. Yep. It's not a blockade. You know, Trump is insane. Okay, if he thinks that's a blockade. And seriously, all you have to do is read a few, you know, Trump went to military school. Didn't they make him read, you know, books, Navy novels?
Trump doesn't read.
Oh, that's true.
He watches Fox News. All right, because if he did read, he, you know, I just from what I could see, you looking at the Financial Times, they have analytics that shows 34 Iranian ships have broken the American blockade. And CENTCOM is publicly reporting that they've only stopped 34 ships. So what? This blockade has a 50% effectiveness rate? I mean, that's horrific. Now, I do want to ask you more about the blockade. This is actually Donald Trump talking about the Strait of Hormuz yesterday.
In war with Iran, How long are you willing to wait until you get a unified?
Well, no, they would have opened it up 3 days ago. They came to us and they said, we will agree to open the strait. And all my people were happy. Everybody was happy except me. I said, wait a minute, if we open the strait, that means they're going to make $500 million a day. I don't want them to make $500 million a day until they settle this thing. So I'm the one that kept it closed. We have total control of it. And it'll open when they make a deal or something else happens that's very positive.
So what is the impression that the American
So, Karen, what do you make of Donald Trump basically saying the Strait of Hormuz could be open? There's still going to be a global energy crisis as a result of this war, even if the Strait opened today. But it could be very, very, very bad, or it could be very bad. And Donald Trump seems to be trying to make this catastrophic. I mean, what do we make of the president of the United States saying that?
You know, he thinks about Donald Trump and Donald Trump only. And we, if you remember, and we might have talked about this, Donald Trump, when they first monetized, when the Iranians first began to charge fees for transit to friendly countries, Trump was amazed. He didn't think that was possible. But then he said he wanted to get in on it with the Ayatollah. He was going to work with the new Ayatollah, and they were going to share the proceeds. So this was Trump's reaction to what Iran had done. It wasn't a reaction that said, hey, wow, this really possibly is interesting, or maybe it's illegal. What are we going to do? You know, how do we? No, his reaction was, I want to get in on that business. I want to get in on that deal. That sounds good. Charge people money to transit. That's great. I love it. So he's obsessed with what is in his own head, which is fine, because we all are to some extent. But he's president of the United States, which means people can talk to him and it really makes no difference. It's what he wants and what he thinks. And he thinks that that $500 million that he thinks they may be getting per day, which it's probably not that high, even at the high peak. But, you know, he's just like, oh, I don't want that to happen. And so the whole rest of the world, the global energy crisis, global fertilizer crisis, global helium crisis, the continued tension in the world, the falling apart of NATO. I mean, the things that you would think Trump might be interested in. No, he's not interested in that. None of that matters to him. It doesn't even enter his thing. No, he said, they told me we should probably. No, I said, no, keep it shut. I'm not going to let him make $500 million a day, which, you know, it's really sad. But again, we have we elect presidents who we want civilian control, because military people are crazy too. So we want civilian control of all this stuff. And we elect a president based on how well he can sell his BS to the people and how well the parties can round up people and get them to polls. And then, of course, how well the electric vote counting operation can, and the mail-in ballot operation and all the other ways we count votes can be articulated to give us a president. I mean, we had one that was senile. For how many years was he pretty much off his rocker, not in touch, knew nothing about where he was or what he was doing? For 2 years. Okay, and that was fine. So now we got one who's not senile, but he is incapable of fulfilling his presidential role. He thinks only of his own pocket. And also, why isn't he going after all these people that are making money, you know, all this insider trading that seems to be remarkably associated with the Trump family? What is that about? I mean, he acts like that's nothing. I'm worried about them making $500 million a day. When do I get my chance to blockade the Trump family, you know, from ripping everybody off? This is insane.
Absolutely. Now, I have another clip here of Donald Trump, Karen, and I want to get into the how long you think this conflict will last. As we know, we can't even call it a war because the White House says it's not a war. But of course, we are at war. And this is what Donald Trump had to say.
A war with Iran. How long are you willing to wait until you get a unified response?
Don't rush me, Jeff. Guys like you, you want to say, oh, so we were in Vietnam like for 18 years. We were in Iraq for many, many years. We were in for all the, I don't like to say World War II because that was a biggie, but we were 4.5, almost 5 years in World War II. We were in the Korean War for 7 years. I've been doing this for 6 weeks. And their military is totally defeated. They're outside of the little wise guy ships. I call them the wise guy ships, the little boats that they have running around with guns in them. We'll take them out, too, when we see them.
So, Karen, what do you make of this? Donald Trump basically say, hey, Vietnam went on for 18 years. The Iraq War was long. World War II was long. The Korean War was long. So, I know I said at the start, 24 to 48 hours, and then it was 3 to 4 days, and then it was a couple of weeks, and now it's a couple of months, but hey, give me a break. It could be longer.
Yeah. Yeah, he's someone has fed him that data of the days and lengths of these various wars, and they told him to use that because that'll calm the Americans down, because we're a country that's been at war much more than we have not been at war, overwhelmingly more. So I think someone fed him this information and said, keep talking about how long these other wars were, and then people won't worry about it. And so he's just using that. It's hard to say what he's doing, but I like that he calls these little ships wise guys, because he is a mafia. This is basically mafioso time. Our government is running itself like a mafia. We are dealing with the world as if we are criminal gangs. And actually, isn't that what I think a number of people, Murray Rothbard, said criminal gangs writ large? But it was St. Augustine, long, long ago, 1800 years ago. And he also said that governments and states are criminal gangs writ large. And Trump, when he uses the language of crime, it is at least honest. So I think that's how he's thinking of this as a competition. And really, I think he personalizes it as a competition between Trump and anything that he either wants to steal from or wants to destroy. And of course, the Maduro thing went really well for him, right? He ended up, I guess we're working with the Maduro light government down there and doing whatever we want with that oil, to the extent that you can get that out of the ground. And with Iran, he wants to control all of the trade in the Straits, and he wants to take their oil. He wants their stuff. And what more criminal approach can you take? I see something that I want, so I'm going to go take it. You know, if you live in a neighborhood, and we all live in some sort of neighborhood, and somebody sees what you have, and then they just come and take it, like, you know, and other people say, hey, yeah, so-and-so he took my flower pot off the front of my, you know, stoop. He said he wanted it. Next thing you know, it's gone. And other people say, yeah, we do something about it. People do something about that, right? That's a crime. We have a criminal in our midst, and we must do something about it. We do. We don't tolerate that kind of behavior in our neighborhoods if we can help it. And there's things you can do. But in the global sense, Trump is that criminal. He is that thief who lays his eyes on something, decides he wants it, and then it becomes a personal vendetta for him. You know, it's weird that I personally, who supported Trump, you know, all the times he ran, I liked his message. I thought, well, he's a weirdo. He's from New York. I don't like that. He used to be a Democrat. I don't like that. But what he's saying makes sense. Put America first. Bring the troops home. I like that. End the wars. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out now how come I didn't realize then that he was so full of bullshit. He was such a liar, you know, just playing everybody. You know, I don't get it.
Well, I think if there's any, you know, people criticize libertarians who got on board and support Donald Trump, but, you know, haven't support the policies that they disagree with. And one thing is, you do have to have some level of optimism, right? If a politician is out there saying things that are in line with our philosophy, then you do have to at least support that rhetoric, because if you're just sitting there going, no, he's a liar, it's not going to work, then, you know, you're going to turn off anybody who's going to listen to you, because they're going to just see you as a nihilist. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's reasonable to have had that position. In fact, we'll probably be talking about that on the show next week, because the great comic Dave Smith is returning. Be sure you subscribe so we catch that. Now, Karen, before I let you go, I have to torture your ears and eyes with the second worst war criminal on the face of the planet. This is Benjamin Netanyahu.
I promised you that we would change the face of the Middle East, and that's exactly what we're doing. First of all, in Iran, I had an excellent conversation with President Trump. He is putting a lot of pressure on Iran, both economically and militarily, and we are working in full cooperation. The same goes for Lebanon. We have begun a process to achieve historic peace between Israel and Lebanon, and it is clear to us that Hezbollah is trying to sabotage this. We are maintaining full freedom of action against any threat, including indirect threats. We struck yesterday, we struck today. We are determined to restore security to the residents of the north.
So, Karen, you know, with Netanyahu saying this, how concerned are you that not only are we going to return to war, but if the goal is Israel taking southern Lebanon, destroying Iran, I mean, this seems like a protracted multi-year conflict. It took 15 years to get rid of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. I mean, you know, Jalani taking over is horrific, but, you know, that was what Israel wanted. Are we looking at like another decade and a half of warfare in the Middle East if we're going to try to accomplish Netanyahu and Trump's goals here?
Yeah, well, I think Israel is. I think Netanyahu and his people are definitely looking for an extended, continual expansion of war and expansion of Israeli territory and decimation of any decent power around them, you know, particularly Iran. But, you know, it's interesting because Herodotus or somebody said, you never stick your toe in the same river twice, right? So, yeah, it took 15 years for Syria, and it took, you know, whatever, all the years we've spent in the Middle East messing with people. But the world is changing. The river flows, and fresh water is in that river. These wars, this is really the most unpopular, well, even Netanyahu is unpopular in his own country. But, you know, Americans are not happy with this war. They're not happy with Trump because of it. Europeans are not happy. The whole world is not happy with it. China is probably a little bit not happy, but they're also pretty happy that we're using up all of our weapon systems, so we won't be able to help Taiwan out if that ever comes to blows. So, you know, the world is different, and weapon systems are different. You know, the United States, for all our greatness in our military prowess, you know, that Hegseth can't stop talking about, you know, we don't have hypersonic weapons. You know, many people around the world have hypersonic weapons, okay? We don't have them. We can't even make them. We might have to buy them from Russia or China or even India. So we aren't the country that we were, and our military is not the military that it was. And it's going to break. It's breaking right now. And as it breaks, I think a lot of the stuff that the past trajectory that we've seen with Israel and U.S. as Israel's backer in the Middle East and as a hoping to be the controller of the Middle East, I think that's the whole thing's going to collapse. I think it's going to collapse. I think we're going to see something brand new. And I've been saying this for a while. And really, I was equally shocked as Trump was, you know, when Iran monetized passage in the Strait of Hormuz. I was like, yeah, I didn't think of that. That's cool. And Trump, I think he and I were in agreement. He thought it was cool, too. He just wanted to get in on it. But I think the power system, the power architecture has changed already. You know, the Arab countries that hosted all of our military bases, you really think when we go to them and say, okay, well, those bases were all destroyed by Iran, so we need you to build us some new bases and then buy a bunch of new crap that we're going to sell you at overpriced stuff. It's probably going to be, you know, not next generation. But you know, yeah, we want it to go back like it was. They're going to tell us no. They're going to say no, it cannot go back like it was. And this is beautiful. This is a beautiful thing. And if I have to thank Trump for it in 10 years or even in 3 years, I'll thank him. I'll say, you know, I'm glad you did. You know what, dude? You brought the troops home. Didn't do it the right way. Killed a lot of people in the process, but you brought them home. You reduced our military to a defensive military. I like that. I'll thank him for that. You can be sure I will thank him openly and repeatedly. And I think it's going to happen. I think the longer term trend line is not what it's not looking backwards like Trump does to Vietnam. It's when we look forward to a new world, a new multipolar world, a technologically enabled world, a world that's connected with communication and ideas, things are changing big time and not good for us. So we need to plant our gardens and get some skills. Our life as colonial masters of the planet, I think, are coming to an end.
Absolutely. And Karen, we could add to that list that, hell, he may blow up the NATO alliance. And so, you know, yes, it will happen in all the worst ways. It'll cost America a lot of money.
Yes.
400 troops injured that didn't have to be that way. 13 Americans killed didn't have to be that way. At the same time, Trump is such an ineffective steward of the empire. The destruction of it, I think, overall in the long run will be good for Americans and probably most people around the world. Colonel Karen,
I want you to write that down, what you just said. I'm gonna write it down for you. That was wonderful. He's an ineffective steward of empire, and we can thank him for that.
All right, Karen, I really appreciate your time on the show today. I'll have you back again soon. Everybody, be sure to like and share this episode so we get it out there to more people. And subscribe to the show. Big week next week. We'll likely have Larry Johnson back on Monday as our regular, and then Comet Dave Smith on Wednesday, and we have Richard Medhurst booked for Friday. So really looking forward to talking to those guests. And again, be sure you subscribe so you catch them, and I'll catch you all next week.